This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 3rd, 2019. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, I talk with Mario Canseco of Research Co. about the ripple effects of the Plekis Report, the Nanaimo Provincial by-election, and the Burnaby South federal by-election. And the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are we entering the most bizarre and pivotal Lunar New Year? On the Chinese zodiac, the year of the Earth Pig starts at midnight, February 5th. It's a time of feasts. It's a time of red envelopes containing cash gifts. There are also fireworks and lanterns. Gong Xi Fa Chai and Gong He Fa Choi to those who are celebrating. People born in the year of the pig are said to be smart, loyal, and have compassion. The year of the pig will test the loyalty of many. Beijing will mark 70 years since the founding of communist China, while others we'll look at 60 years since the Dalai Lama fled Tibet, 30 years since the Tiananmen Square massacre, and 20 years since the Falun Gong crackdown. The West's relationship with China is at a crossroads after the U.S. trade war and Canada's arrest of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou, who was charged last week with fraud. The U.S. is seeking her extradition from Vancouver. The controversy helps shine a light on China's deplorable human rights record and disrespect for the rule of law. A lot of attention is given the Donald Trump circus. He could be impeached before 2020, or he could finish a second term as late as January 2025. But Chinese President Xi Jinping became president for life in 2018, and he's not going anywhere. He's the most powerful Chinese ruler since Mao. Xi is aiming for worldwide domination. Ivy Lee, a member of the Friends of Hong Kong, wrote in a commentary for the McDonnell Laurier Institute website that Huawei not only threatens Canada's national security, but also privacy and democracy. If Canada lets Huawei build the 5G telecommunications network, Lee wrote, Canada will give the Chinese Communist Party the power to spy on Canadian soil and the power to control Canadians with business or family in China. Canada will also not be trusted by its allies. As Lee wrote, this is a wake-up call to all of us. If we keep being lured by the evasive Chinese market and choose not to stand up to China's human rights violation, it will come back to haunt us. After all, with our export to China at only 4.3% and a trading deficit at $36.5 billion U.S., we must rethink our China strategy. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Los Angeles Times, Brittany Mejia and Joel Rubin report, travel agents charged with bringing pregnant Chinese women to give birth on U.S. soil. When pregnant Chinese women called You Win USA Vacation Services, they did not receive information on visiting Disneyland or the Grand Canyon. Instead, they sought coveted advice on how to make a very different type of trip, one aimed at giving birth on U.S. soil so their children would be American citizens. UWIN USA employees allegedly coached the women on the lies they should write on bogus applications for tourist visas and made sure the women traveled before their bellies swelled too much to conceal. Fly first to Hawaii to blend in with the hordes of tourists. Enlist the Trump International Hotel in Honolulu as your destination, the women were told. Then hop a flight to Los Angeles. It was a scheme that federal authorities say went on for years. The operator of UWIN USA and the owners of another allegedly illicit birth tourism company in Southern California were arrested and charged with an array of crimes, including immigration fraud, money laundering, and identity theft, according to indictments filed in U.S. District Court. Arrested January 31st were Dongyun Lee, 41, of Irvine, who was identified in court records as an executive at UWIN USA Vacation Services, as well as Michael Yu Liu, 53, of Rancho Cucamonga, and Jing Dong, 42, of Fontana, who authorities said owned and operated a company called USA Happy Baby in San Bernardino. All three pleaded not guilty in court appearances. In the South China Morning Post, Zhuang Pingwei reports, Chinese city caps bride price at $7,400 to reduce wedding pressure. The bride price, or betrothal gifts given to a woman's family, has gone up so much amid China's huge gender imbalance that a city government has decided to step in. Authorities in Puyang, in central Henan province, issued new guidelines on the practice on January 29th, saying they aim to curb the high cost of betrothal gifts and change the custom. The average bride price in the city had reached more than $20,000, according to a survey by news aggregator Yijian Jichun last year. In Puyang, the average annual disposable income was estimated at the equivalent of just over $3,500. According to a National Bureau of Statistics survey in 2017, there were more than 4,600 males to just over 3,000 females in China, or a male-to-female sex ratio of 1.5. There were 42 million more men than women in China that year, according to the World Bank. And in ABC News Australia, Bang Chao and Christina Zhao report, Yang Hengzhen, controversy surrounds detained Australian-Chinese writer's relations with Beijing. The detention of Chinese-born Australian writer Yang Hengzhen over suspected espionage has sparked a division within the Chinese community, with critics questioning his professional history as well as his ties to the Chinese Communist Party. Dr. Yang, whose legal name is Yang Jun, was a former employee at China's Ministries of Foreign Affairs and State Security before migrating to Australia, where he reportedly obtained his citizenship in 2002. Dr. Yang was at a Chinese state banquet in 2014, which was also attended by Xi Jinping. He is also a personal shopper selling products, including Australian baby formula. The arrest made some Chinese diaspora more cautious about speaking out against Beijing. The 53-year-old had been living with his family in New York, where he has been a visiting scholar at Columbia University since 2017, before his arrest at Guangzhou Airport in southern China in January. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Victoria Times columnist, Carla Wilson reports, BC Greens advised to pause, refocus, after Nanaimo by-election. University of Victoria political scientist Michael Prince has mapped out some homework for the BC Green Party in the wake of its dismal showing in the Nanaimo by-election won by the NDP's Sheila Malcolmson. Prince said the Andrew Weaver-led party should strategically select some key issues and refresh their distinctiveness from the NDP. The Green Party's support in the January 30th by-election slid to 7.38% from 20% in the 2017 provincial election. As for the Liberals, businessman Tony Harris is the reason that party received a higher percentage of the vote to 40.47% in this election compared with 32.5% in 2017. The turnout was estimated to be 53%. The Greens hold three seats in the BC legislature and are in a governing alliance with the NDP, which has 41 seats. The BC Liberals have 42. In the Seattle Times, David Gutman reports, Howard Schultz offers few specifics January 31st as he tests hometown waters for White House bid. The ex-Starbucks CEO's appearance at the Moore Theater, technically part of a nationwide book tour, is one of about a dozen planned as he crisscrosses the nation over the next 6 weeks, gauging potential support for a presidential run. The event was the billionaire's first public appearance in Seattle since announcing on the CBS news program 60 Minutes that he is considering a run for the presidency. Schultz, who describes himself as a lifelong Democrat, said he wants to see President Donald Trump removed from office, but that today's Democratic Party has moved too far to the left. Democratic Governor of Washington Jay Inslee, who is exploring a presidential run himself, compared Schultz's candidacy to Washington's current measles outbreak in a cable news appearance. Quote, "It is a potential fatal disease, if you will, infecting us with Donald Trump for another 4 years," Inslee said. "We cannot have that. I just declared an emergency for measles in my state. This is an emergency as well. You shouldn't run, Howard." End quote. Schultz himself started Starbucks' global expansion right here in Vancouver at Waterfront Station on March 1, 1987. And in the Seattle Weekly, Ashley Hiroko reports, Chinese tech company Huawei charged with stealing secrets from T-Mobile. Supposed stolen information on replicating Tappy, a T-Mobile robot housed in Bellevue and used to test cell phones, has led to a 10-count grand jury indictment against Huawei, a Chinese-based telecoms giant with offices in the Seattle region. The charges, unsealed Monday, January 28th, are the latest installment of action taken against the technology company and follow a T-Mobile lawsuit filed in 2014. A jury awarded the phone company $4.8 million in 2017 over stolen trade secrets. According to indictment paperwork, in 2012, Huawei began a concerted effort to steal information on a T-Mobile phone testing robot called Tappy in an attempt to construct their own similar device. The robot was used to test cell phones before being shipped out to customers and was housed in T-Mobile's Bellevue device lab. It could simulate numerous weeks of cell phone use in a 72-hour period, according to reports. The United States filed its extradition case against Meng, and the Canadian government has until March 1st to decide whether it will proceed. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Our special guest this week is Mario Canseco of Research Co., talking about political winds changing or not changing. This week, Research Co. put out a poll that said 70% of respondents want the BC legislature to be placed under the Freedom of Information Law. Even Commissioner Michael McAvoy agreed in an exclusive interview with The Breaker that it is the solution to protect against waste and corruption. And this was all in the wake of the report by Speaker Darrell Plekis into corruption in the BC legislature. Was that a surprising number to you, especially that there was agreement by people who identify themselves as voters for the BC Liberals and NDP and Greens from 2017?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest surprise of the survey, to see that the regular polarization that we usually encounter when you're asking about policy matters wasn't present on this particular issue. You see always BC Liberal voters were upset with the government and are essentially against anything it wants to do. You see BC NDP voters who are in favor of it because they're happy with the way things are going. But on this one, there's definitely a high level of support from Liberals, from Greens, and from NDPers to essentially change the way this works. And I was hoping for a number that was higher than 50% on the FOI question. I was pleasantly surprised when I saw it was 70%. So it might be a really time for the three parties to come together and to talk about specific things they want to do, not just pay lip service and just talk about transparency and the kind of situation that could get this sidetracked, but to actually have specific policies ready to be implemented sooner rather than later.
Now, those three parties came together in Nanaimo, but that by-election didn't live up to the hype. The NDP held the riding. Sheila Malcolmson, the MP for the NDP, who quit federal politics to run in this riding, had a comfortable 2,000 vote win, so that means an early election is unlikely. The Greens had a poor showing. How much of an impact do you think that the Plekis report had on preventing the Liberals from scoring an upset?
I think it definitely helped. I think it made a lot of people who maybe were flirting with voting for the Liberals a little bit uneasy about the situation. I think in a situation where you don't have that report coming out as quickly as it did, then maybe they could have done better. That being said, by-elections can be notoriously tricky. I mean, if we go back to April 2012 and the two by-elections that the NDP won against the Liberals, when the next election rolled around in 2013, they went back to roughly the same level of support that they had in 2009. So maybe we're in for a similar scenario. I think part of the situation was that the BC Liberals really spent a lot of time talking about how this was for the taking, and a lot of their voters believed it. So losing by 9 points, when you said this was going to be a very close race, regardless of what any poll had said, certainly it seems like a defeat. I think if they had campaigned in a way that said, well, we know it's a tough one, we're going to try our best, but they brought out their biggest guns, they had a lot of people knocking on doors, and then they ended up losing. It's a little bit more decent than the result they got against Leonard Krog the last time around, but it's still a defeat.
One of the sidebar stories about this by-election is Main Street Research from Ontario. They predicted a double-digit Liberal win. Main Street, of course, was behind the polls that predicted a change in mayoralty in Calgary in 2017. That didn't happen. A lot of skepticism now of Main Street's methodology and numbers. Research Co. didn't do a poll. in Nanaimo. Why was that, and what is your response and reaction to what happened with Main Street?
Well, I thought about doing a survey on this because of all the hype that was generated. It's the kind of thing that is impossible to do online. Even if you were using four or five different online panels, you wouldn't get the level of granularity that is required to conduct a survey with the standards that I hold myself to. I tried to do this by phone, and most of the telephone providers came back with a situation that wasn't really enough to do something that was meaningful. The number of completed interviews was somewhere between the 200 and 300 mark. In a by-election where you have a lot of people who aren't even ready or care, that's bound to be lower, and you still have to deal with undecided voters. So let's say, for the sake of argument, you do a survey with 250 respondents in Nanaimo and 20% are undecided, then your margin of error is going to be insurmountable. So that was the reason why I chose not to do this. One of the problems with by-elections is that you can't really function in the same frame of mind that you see in other political processes. There is no national campaign. There's no identification with leaders. There's no movement all around you in the media that is reminding you that that there's an election going on. And I think that definitely plays a role in the difficulty of anybody who tries to do by-election polling. It's not as easy as it is when you're looking at a larger sample frame, such as Canada or BC, when you're looking at a single riding only.
Now, this is the first anniversary of Andrew Wilkinson becoming leader of the BC Liberal Party, taking over from Christy Clark as the full-time leader. He beat Diane Watts in the final ballot to become the new leader. It's also the day after Groundhog Day and after the BC legislature scandal. The BC Liberals are still under a very large shadow. Last year, it was a new slogan and logo. Now, Andrew Wilkinson says three unnamed MLAs are looking to retire before the next election. He's starting to talk renewal and use a candidate like Tony Harris from the Nanaimo by-election as a model. Do you think Wilkinson has been too slow to renew this party?
I would say so, particularly compared with what we saw after Christy Clark took over from Gordon Campbell. We were in a situation where people were really upset about the HSD. The economy was doing better in BC than in other parts of the country, but we still had a scenario where people were upset with Gordon Campbell. His approval ratings on a survey that I conducted went down to 9%, which was unfathomable. And I think there was a need from the party to essentially say, once we have Christy Clark in place, we're going to have to start taking away some of those core elements of the Gordon Campbell year. And you started to see some of the ministers who served under Campbell leaving the government and doing different things, declaring that they weren't going to be running in the next election. I think they were expecting probably to do better in Nanaimo and maybe say, everything is fine, the strategy is working, we took away a seat from the NDP, and we need to be ready for the next election, which could happen in 6 weeks. Now that that is out of the question, I think that there's an opportunity for the party to reinvent itself and to try to steer clear from some of the elements that they have there that are seen as very cozy with the old regime, if you will. And there's definitely people there who have been members of the Legislative Assembly since 2001. And, you know, it might be time for a change. And it's one way in which Wilkinson is going to try to revitalize a party that right now isn't really doing as well as it could.
Now, one of those looking for the exit door might be Rich Coleman. He was looking for the exit door back in 2018, looking to throw his hat in the ring for the mayoralty in Surrey. That didn't happen. There is an opening in his area in Langley, as Mark Warawa is retiring from the federal Conservatives after so many years. Do you think that Rich Coleman might make that jump, get out of provincial politics and finish his career as a federal politician?
I think there's a big possibility of it. There's been other examples. I mean, we saw Diane Watts going federally, even though it was a little bit short-lived. We're seeing Terry Lake flirting with a run in Kelowna. So there's definitely an opportunity for somebody who's got experience and a little bit of fame within provincial politics to try to make that jump. I guess it'll really depend on the type of situation that the Conservatives decide. And are you going to be looking for new blood? Are you going to be looking for candidates who are a little bit younger? Or are you okay having somebody who's very well known running in an area where he might be very well liked? But that being said, it's not really in his hands. I think there might be a situation where the federal Conservatives weren't precisely fans of Christy Clark in the end. And I think they would probably look into something like this with a lot of care, because you never know how this is going to go. It's definitely somebody who polarizes views, and you might assume that having somebody who's well-known can keep the seat, but there's also people there who are disappointed with the way the Liberals acted provincially. So it's a bit of a catch-22.
Now the focus turns to the Burnaby South federal by-election and whether Jagmeet Singh of the NDP, the NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, can win a seat in the House or not. What should we look for in the weeks to come?
Well, I think one of the key issues here is how are you going to run a campaign as the leader of a party when you're doing it essentially by yourself? And I think what we need in this case from the NDP would be people who are closer to the party from other jurisdictions coming in and knocking on doors. You know, I think they need to show that the leader is supported by people who are coming all over the place. So bring in some of your best-known MPs from Ontario, maybe, some from Quebec. Bring some of the BC MPs as well to knock on doors and to say, you know, we need this man in Ottawa, and he's our leader right now, and you have an opportunity to have somebody who represents a BC riding leading one of the three main parties, which we haven't had since Stockwell Day in 2000. So I think there's a way to sell that campaign. But if we wind up in a situation where nobody from the NDP federally, nobody of name, nobody with certain fame knocks on doors with Jagmeet Singh, then that's going to send a message that he's in way over his head, that he's going doing this alone. And now we have reports of NDP members saying to him, well, you're the new kid in town, and we think that if you lose this by-election, there's not going to be a chance for you to stay. The fact that that report came out and it's naming nine different people in that meeting and three who were willing to speak off the record certainly suggests that there's tension as far as where the NDP could go if Jagmeet Singh doesn't win the by-election by at least a couple of touchdowns.
Well, thanks very much to Mario Canseco of Research Co. for being our guest this week on the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to British Columbia's Information and Privacy Commissioner Michael McAvoy. In an exclusive interview with the Breaker.News, the official top watchdog for transparency added his voice to those demanding the BC NDP government put the legislature under the Freedom of Information laws. In the wake of Speaker Darrell Plekis's report about corruption at the legislature, McAvoy said the legislature deserves no special treatment, and it is an anomaly in a province where 2,900 public bodies, bigger and smaller, must follow the law. McAvoy said, "The time is now for lawmakers to modernize the FOI law." You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 3rd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 3rd in 1959, 60 years ago, rock and roll pioneers Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson, died in a Beechcraft Bonanza plane crash in Iowa? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.